All right, welcome everyone to DJM's Diversity Pod, and we are back with another episode. Had to take a little bit of a break from a week just because I needed that time to rest my voice, but we are back and at it again, and we are here to talk about another EDI issue. This week, we are going to be spending a lot of time dissecting the idea of mental health. Mental Health Day, or International Mental Health Awareness Day, just passed. And what you get on these days are a myriad of postings on social media about tips, tricks, advice, self-affirmations, anecdotes of where people were treated right, where people were treated wrong, how people should be treated, are all posted in a slew of affirmations for Mental Health Day. Whilst I love the push towards recognizing and raising awareness for mental health, when we designate a specific day for it, we don't really care about the consistency of addressing the cause. The cause is one of the most important things, and consistency is important because when we are trying to address stigmas and self-esteem issues, and we are also trying to address treatment and counseling, advice, tips, guidance, daily self-help, if we are not doing this in a consistent manner, then are we really going to be addressing the issue of mental health? That's some food for thought to get us started. In particular, today, we are going to be talking about social anxiety. And if we have the time, we are going to maybe branch out and talk about a few more other things. The one thing that I want to highlight is that on social media and in certain employment organizations, there seems to be this generic set of advice that is thrown at people for them to try and utilize to make themselves feel better when they are feeling any symptoms of anxiety, depression, or worry. We need to realize that this one-size-fits-all approach is literally redundant. It does not need to work, and it doesn't actually work on a lot of different people. What am I trying to get at here? Let's think about a person, right? An individual. Everyone has genetic makeups that are completely different. They all have different environmental pressures that can also affect them. They have different cognition. The way their mind works is different. Yet we seem to fit and squeeze individuals into this one-size-fits-all approach. We need to stop generalizing treatments to everyone. And this is what we are going to try and address in this situation. We're going to think about all of the different circumstances that you could possibly address when it comes to social anxiety. Again, some of these approaches are somewhat generalizable, and some of the symptoms that are also somewhat generalizable, but we are going to make it our best attempt to demonstrate certain different circumstances or things to look out for, or maybe show you how a person who may have social anxiety will react in a way that is completely different to what you may expect. So the first thing we obviously have to cover is, what is social anxiety? Well, it is more than feeling shy, having stage fright, and feeling nervous. But for those people who do have shyness, stage fright, and feel nervous in front of crowds or people, there is no need for you to feel like you are at fault, or there is a stigma concerning you about how you react and interact with people, because those three things can actually be a symptom of social anxiety. Some examples of instances where people may feel social anxiety are talking to new people for the first time, or it can also be entering into a communal space, such as public transport, going to work or to school or to university, and finding it difficult to interact with individuals. And this isn't just the case of they're new and they're strangers, but it can also be you have known these individuals for a long time, but you just cannot find the means to approach them. It is important to realize that for some people, it can be a lot less, and for some people, the anxiety can be a lot more. Anxiety is on a spectrum, a lot like other physical and mental illnesses. And each individual who has any degree of social anxiety can fall under their own unique spectrum and have a range of symptoms, or even a combination of different symptoms that can affect them. Some may be cognitive, some can be triggering via the environment, and some can be physical and biological and can physically affect their body. What we are going to do now is break down some of these symptoms, whether they are cognitive, environmental, or physical, and talk to you about how you may be able to recognize them. So, the majority of the information that I have taken regarding symptoms was taken directly from the NHS UK website. And for those listeners who are not from the United Kingdom, that is the National Health Service UK. And this information can be found on their page if you type or Google social anxiety. I will also try and link it in directly to the podcast description or the accompanying blog, which I will talk about at the end. So let's get down to talking about the symptoms. So, getting nervous or getting worried about certain daily activities that involve social interactions or talking to people. This can be starting off meeting strangers, starting a new job, having conversations with people on the phone, via email, or even via text. Many people think that social anxiety has something to do with being face-to-face. Well, for many that may be true, but many also get anxiety from talking to people on the phone, making mistakes, connectivity issues, causing others issues, and it can lead to a panic. Worrying a lot about social engagement is another symptom. And this can be group conversations, group activities, group work. This can also be extended to university, school, or organization or company get-togethers or parties where some sort of social engagements are required. And this can also include residential trips or stayaways with people that you do not regularly surround yourself with. Now, a lot of what I have said has got to do with people who are external to your household. In some cases, the social anxiety can actually be towards your family members as well, or people that you may live with if you do not live with your family. You may find it difficult to interact with them or talk with them, and this can either be something that has always happened or is something that can develop over time. And we are going to be talking about how COVID has been a massive influencing factor in certain individuals developing social anxiety, whether it be with the people closest to them, or whether it be entering into the workforce or school institution again for the very first time in a very long time, and talking about how that has an impact or an effect on people. Some of the more severe symptoms can actually include having panic attacks and having a phobia of crowds or being around people, because this can lead to an overwhelming sense of fear and anxiety. Obviously, the time range for these panic attacks or anxiety attacks appearing ranges for an individual. For some people, it can last minutes, whereas it can take another individual hours to actually come down from the sensation of a panic attack. And the fact that everyone's experiences are different is something that needs to be realized and acknowledged. Okay. Having certain physical symptoms is also another important thing. And some of the ranges that have been mentioned by the NHS are heart palpitations, where your heart beats really fast and your heartbeat is very apparent to yourself. You've got sweaty palms, low self-esteem, paranoia and worry about embarrassing yourself or making a mistake, or fearing that if you do start a social interaction, something will inevitably go wrong. Other symptoms that are physical are headaches, trembling, and possibly nausea from feeling that worry. One of the key underlying factors when it comes to social anxiety is people find it incredibly difficult to talk. You feel like you are being constantly watched or judged, or you are waiting for something negative to happen to you while you are in that social setting. As I mentioned before, I really do want to talk about COVID, because COVID has had an incredibly massive impact on the way we interact. And for many countries, it still may be going on. Many countries and many workforces are still online. And this has a massive influence on how we build ourselves up to interact with people. So let's take a look at it anyway. COVID begins and many countries across the globe are moving online, going digital. So that means everybody sees everyone else that they normally interacted with on a daily basis on a screen. The concept of dressing up and traveling ceased to exist for a while. And what you also have is this constant interaction and closeness and nearness to whoever you are living with at that moment in time. And what you also get is this distance away from people who you actually saw a lot of the time. And for students going through that period of time, it was a little bit more different, because for those who were in transitional phases of their education, ending university, starting university, ending sixth form or GCSE, starting secondary school, ending primary school, all of these different things, you're meeting new people or leaving some of your closest friends without having a proper interaction for more than a year. So this is something that also has to be considered. As I started to return to both education and to the workforce in person, going back to the office, one of the first things that I personally realised and was said by others, and I also said it, was that I've forgotten how to socialise. And I am not one who suffers from social anxiety. And if you think about somebody who does, think about how they may be feeling. Try and empathise with their situation. Their circumstances are completely different in a way that they know they now have to go from possibly not having to deal with face-to-face interactions on a daily basis from people who may have caused it or triggered it in the first hand, to now having to start dealing with it again. But then in the converse, you've got some may prefer social interactions via face-to-face, and they are happy to get back to the office, because dealing with everybody online, with internet and with technical glitches possibly happening, seeing everybody on a screen may have been too isolating for them, and digital communication may have been a trigger. Remember, this is not a one-way street and it is not a one-size-fits-all approach. For some, the entire process might be stressful. Not just the digital communication, but also they're returning to the workforce. Different elements can cause different levels of social anxiety. It can be very daunting to approach a new environment, and it can make you feel physically or mentally nervous or fearful when you start to transition into a stage where you have to continuously socially interact once again. And what I am going to say now is some of the generic advice that has been thrown out to people, has been thrown out on social media with regards to how to tackle or tame or control anxiety. And I will talk about why those words are problematic. So, some of the examples that people have been given are drinking peppermint or fennel tea to calm any stomach issue or nerves related to social interactions. Counting back slowly from 10. Deep breathing exercises. Talking with someone from your HR or managerial department. Walking into fresh air or open spaces. I think this list is incredibly interesting for a few reasons, just because this is incredibly generic. You know, they're not helping with or treating with the anxiety. They're treating with but the causes of anxiety. What needs to be done more is understanding the importance of communication. Taking a look at some of these examples, trying to talk to managerial staff, it may only cause certain individuals more anxiety and more worry because realistically you do not know how they are going to react. And certain HR departments and managerial staff may have to put company ethos on top of, you know, helping out staff. And this is not something untoward or something that is unheard of, because it has definitely been cited and definitely been done when you've got lots of employees or former employees discussing their own companies and organizations that put work before addressing mental health. Some of the examples that are also given in this generic list are not necessarily appropriate or may not be opportune moments to take place in the social situation that they may be in, like drinking the tea. What if you're during a meeting? Or what if you cannot take that moment to step outside in the fresh air before you need assistance? There are a lot of little different combinations or little things to think about that can actually make a difference. Many people throw these treatments out to individuals in passing because they have heard that it works, they have read it on the internet, or they know that in some way, shape or form, or to some degree, it has worked for someone that they know. Some of the critical factors that have been related to social anxiety that need to be mentioned are some of the things that I will now move on to talk about. Social anxiety is not something that anybody should be ashamed of. It is not a weakness, it is a fault, it is a condition that can either be treated and it can be guided through counselling, therapy, or any other kind of aid that can be suitable to that individual. Because obviously we have to think about that spectrum again. What works for what person? Employers need to create an environment where they are not going to penalise and they are not going to judge an employee for disclosing their condition. If they need to shift departments, meet new colleagues, attend company social events, they should be able to be prepared, and employers should allow them to become prepared for that situation rather than throwing them in at the deep end. Employees should be allowed to raise any concerns regarding their social anxiety with employers, but as reality stands, that is absolutely not the case for many people, and what they end up doing is hiding in secret and then having to struggle when they are by themselves or with people who don't necessarily know how to handle it. The one thing when it comes to social anxiety is that communication is key. The first step, as mentioned before, is that employees should be discussing and disclosing the information. But that's only when the employer or the managerial staff are making the reasonable accommodations and making the environment non-judgmental. They should not be penalizing anyone for disclosing a condition that may make it difficult for them in certain social circumstances. Employees should have the opportunities to ask questions if this is something that will help them. And in this regard, if sometimes you need to ask a multiple array of questions or a series of questions to get you understanding how to approach a certain social situation, then maybe you possibly might need to hire a trained external specialist to deal with the situation or circumstance. Finally, be aware that some socially anxious people may be hesitant to speak in the first place. Do not force them and do not push them into a situation where they can possibly be triggered into a physical panic attack or anxiety attack. Consider alternate forms of communication. Sometimes certain individuals, with whatever regards it may actually interact better socially under certain circumstances or under certain forms of communication. This can include communicating via image, via text, via email, via phone, via video call or video chat, or in person. Another consideration is hiring someone who knows how to coach an individual through social anxiety, because you may not be trained enough to deal with the issues that come with social anxiety. So again, that is something to think about. The final thing that I kind of want to leave everybody on is that just because I've been talking about how we can help individuals with social anxiety doesn't mean that they are in any way a lost cause, or that they can't maintain daily tasks, or they can't maintain the tasks that are required by their employment under pressure. Often there seems to be a rampant stigma attached to mental health and anxiety with individuals tackling their mental health issues. Rather than having this pessimistic view of individuals who have mental health struggles, we need to think about a more proactive manner. What can be done to make the environment more comfortable to thrive? The right type and the level of social engagement and communication is one of the key factors that needs to be taken into consideration with social anxiety. I want to thank everyone for joining me this week. This has been DJM's Diversity Pod. And mental health is probably one of the most important factors that we need to be addressing in the workplace, because it is so under-addressed. I want to hear your thoughts on what I talk about and what I say, because you may not always agree, and that's perfectly fine, but I always want to hear your thoughts or your perspective on the matter. Like, share, comment. I want you to get your voices heard and get your voices out there on the matter at hand. This has been Noor, and I will see you next time with another podcast.